Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. Joining me in studio right now is Mary Niemela from the Barber Kettle Gunlock Shelter. It's good to have you back.
Good morning.
We have you in a couple times a year usually, and it's always good to kind of give an update on how things are going at the shelter home, and I thought let's go ahead and start with that and talk about things so far this summer.
Okay, well, we certainly appreciate the time to come in again, and we always like to be able to talk about what's happening at the shelter. And in the past, I've talked about the possibility of moving our facility to a one-story building, and it would be so nice. But we don't have anybody really saying, hey, we want to buy this four-story building that you have here. And right in the middle of the historical park, we don't have anybody offering to do that yet. So we thought, well, we might as well renovate what we have and do some work inside the shelter. So that's our big project coming up between now and the fall, is to look at all the plumbing and the heating and the heating's fine, but the plumbing and electricity, and redo some bathrooms and repaint all the walls and things like that. And so I will be sending out some bids to all those people involved in doing that to see what I can get to get some help with all those different needs that we have there right now.
The home itself, talk about its purpose.
Well, its purpose is we're a shelter for victims of domestic violence and their children. And, that includes both males and females. And we do provide services for males who are victims of domestic violence, although we can't house them at the shelter, but we would find another safe place for them to be. And so that's basically what we're there, is mainly for safety and shelter and food and clothing. And if somebody needs to come with, basically just leave their house and come because it's that unsafe for them to be at that time, and that's what we're there for. You know, it's not always something that's happened. It may be just when it's the opportune time for a victim to leave, because leaving is a very dangerous process. It's one of the hardest things for her to do, and I'm going to say her because 95% of the abuse is against women in the United States of reported cases, and that's where our statistics are coming from, is that she's the victim and he's the assailant. So if somebody needs to come, just come. It doesn't have to be an incident that's happened at that time.
I was wondering about that as you were talking. Wondering if, when a woman shows up on your doorstep, do they come bags packed, ready to go, car loaded with their favorite items, or are they sometimes there in a nightgown and just trying to get away from, maybe a more hotter incident, and they don't know where to go, but they go there.
Right, that's both incidences. We've had people show up with a moving van one time quite a while ago, and that was quite a shock to see that pull up in the back. Not a big one, but enough to make us think, oh my gosh. And and then also just to show up, and either sometimes they come with police or sometimes they just come on their own. Sometimes they come in where they're bloodied and beat up, and we do the best we can. And if they need medical attention, if they're willing, we get them to the hospital. It's never the same thing twice. It's every situation for a victim of domestic violence is her situation, and we treat them all with confidentiality and respect, and we do the best that we can to provide a service for her.
What type of crisis workers do you have at the shelter home for that kind of situation where somebody arrives? What can you provide other than a safe place?
Well, we have our advocates. Well, we have an outreach advocate that's in the court. You've seen Nikki when you've been up there, and she's there to provide a service for those that are there for whatever reason. They've come up to the court for arraignments or pretrials or whatever. So she sits with them and advocates with them and lets the victim know that what the process is. And she's not an attorney, but she knows enough from speaking with all the court officials as to what to expect, and also from sitting up in the court, you learn a whole lot. And of course, they're trained. Everyone that works for the shelter is trained about the dynamics of domestic violence. And also then, besides her work in the court, she's also our outreach advocate, where she helps with housing, or we've gotten people to the appointments at the Department of Health and Human Services for that, and you know, we just do a gamut of services. There's so many things that if you named any one thing that you could think of, we've probably helped somebody do that, you know, from getting their birth certificates to their driver's license to relocating them totally away from where we are, helping them get their bus tickets. If, you know, we don't necessarily have a budget for that, but we've had help through Salvation Army and St. Vincent's and churches and other organizations that have a pool of money to help people.
How many people are housed at the shelter home at any given time?
Well, we are a 10-bed shelter, which means the state, our funders fund us for 10 beds. However, we've had 23 at one time for a short 5-day period. That was 10 women and 13 children. And I make reference to that time all the time because that was a very busy 5-day period of time. You know, even when we have more than what we're funded for, we don't get another pool of staff to come in to help with that. You know, we have the same amount of staff no matter what. And so it can be busier at times. But I think the last time I was on, I mentioned that in our last fiscal year, we had 2,439 shelter nights, which means if a woman and three children came in for every night they're there, that's four shelter nights. And so that's a very busy year for us. The previous year was 715. So you can just tell by the numbers that it's still happening and it's not going away.
So four floors, 10 beds.
Well, that four floors is one of them is the basement.
Okay.
However, it's a storage area for us, you know.
Well, I'm just, you know, trying to picture, you know, we don't have a huge population here. And mm-hmm. But, you know, your shelter home is, you know, probably bulging at, you know, more times right. than not with people seeking help. And we know that those that actually come and seek help actually are only a small percentage of those who suffer.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yet we see a small percentage of what's actually happening. Even what you see in the courts is such a small percentage of what's actually happening in our own community. I mean, if you look at those shelter nights, those people didn't all end up in the court. You know, their partners didn't all end up in the court. And I say partners because it isn't always your husband or your spouse, you know. And that percentage is just who got caught.
It'd be nice if that kind of a service could be free to give. Unfortunately, we know it's not. It costs money, and mm-hmm. of course, you need resources to operate a home like that. And so let's talk about some of the things that you have as far as, let's start with how people can help support.
Right. You know, we get a certain amount of funding from the Domestic Sexual Violence Prevention and Treatment Board, and that's out of Lansing, and I'm using my hands to decide all those letters for the acronym there. It's like anybody can see that. And that's where our main funding comes from. Plus, we're United Way recipients, and we're very grateful for that that money as well. And then our Friends of the Shelter campaign, as our board of directors has a Friends of the Shelter campaign, which that went out in the spring this year. And now we do send a reminder letter to those who haven't, who's on the list who haven't given yet. And that'll come out probably in the beginning of August, that reminder letter for the Friends of the Shelter campaign. And, you know, we have other ways that people can donate on our website. There's a PayPal link as well. And you certainly don't need to get a letter in the mail to maybe donate to the shelter. I remember walking this past winter into the IGA in Calumet, and a woman I know saw me, and she said, "Oh, Mary," she said, "you guys just do a great service there, and here." And she gave me a cash donation, you know. And she's not on our Friends of the Shelter list, but she really, you know, thinks we provide a great service. And so we're just as appreciative of that as anybody who can, you know, donate anything to us. And it's not just the financial part, it's the material things as well. You know, we have a group of people that, you know, every month donate paper products to us or whatever we need. And that's really great. And there's a sorority at Michigan Tech who last year dropped off a huge paper product donation and two pickup trucks full of paper products, and it like filled our living room, and that was a wonderful thing. So all of that turns into cash that we don't have to spend, you know. And that one year when we had our large number of people there, I mean, our food budget is around $2,500 a year. The last fiscal year, we put out over $9,000 for food. So there's times when, you know, organizations will do a food drive for us, and that doesn't happen that often. But if somebody's thinking of doing something, you know, the canned goods or the non-perishable items are great too. Because and coffee is a huge commodity at the shelter, both regular and decaf. You know, people want to. I always say the best conversation with a client or a resident is sitting at the kitchen table, having a cup of coffee and talking about whatever, whether it's her situation or her children or the weather. You know, it's just somebody that is a nonviolent conversation.
Talk about some other ways that people can donate and think about.
Well, you know, of course, attending our events, and we're going to be talking about some of that in a little bit, but maybe estate planning. You know, if we've had some calls where people have been doing that and thinking about their wills and where they're going to leave, you know, any of their monies that are left when after they've passed away. And so we're, you know, very willing to be on that list in your will or in your estate planning. You can talk to your attorney about that, or if you've done some pre-arrangements with the funeral home, you know, you can talk to them about that as well. Or, and you know, just consider the shelter. It's not, you know, anything that's given to us monetary-wise is first and foremost going to direct services to clients. And even having our staff there is direct services to clients for those that are there overnight. We have service for, you know, every day. We're there 24/7 every day of the year, so somebody has to be there overnight all the time. And but, you know, most of our monetary donations that come in from the community go to the direct services to clients, which is helping them with transportation or getting to school or birth, like I said before, birth certificates, those types of things. So even that estate planning can be, you know, designated to the shelter for that purpose. And also volunteering. Anytime that anybody volunteers at the shelter, that gets turned into our in-kind donations that we have to have a certain percentage of to match our grants that we get from our funders. And you know, we certainly are in need of volunteers right now. When I first started a little over 25 years ago, we had 35 volunteers, and now we have about a half a dozen. And that's due to the busyness of people. I understand that. But I think if somebody could think about, you know, we have to cover 168 hours a week, and about 55 to 60 of that are covered by our regular day staff, and then we do have somebody that donates 30 hours of time to us for three nights overnights, and then the rest of it is covered by paid people with a smattering of a few volunteer hours there from other volunteers. But even if you could volunteer once a week or once a month for a 3 or 4 or 5 hour shift, that would be so helpful. If we had a large pool of people to do that, it wouldn't be so time consuming to the person. I mean, if you volunteer, that doesn't mean you have to come every week for, you know, 5-6 hours a week. And we know people are busy, and we respect that. And so any little bit of time you can give, it's very worthwhile. It really is. It's amazing to hear our volunteers say that. We've had a volunteer that's been, let's see, I started in 1990. I think she started in 1992, and she's given that time in memory of a friend of hers, and she dedicated that volunteer time for that purpose. And her life's got a little busy, and as her children grew older, and so she's still volunteering, but it's about twice a month, and that's great. We still appreciate that as much as anybody that even comes once a week.
So. Are you looking for a particular skill set in volunteers? Are you looking for particular types of people?
Well, everyone's, you know, given the proper training for the shelter. And however, you have to be a good listener. One of the first things we teach a volunteer is to say, mm-hmm. Because we can't really sit there and tell a client or a resident or anybody that's coming in is what they should be doing, because that's what they've been told all along. So what we do is we do the best we can to be that listener, that empathetic listener. And learn how to say mm-hmm, and not so much question about, you know, why she didn't call the police and why she didn't do this and why she didn't do that, or that she should be doing all this other stuff. It's her situation, and she needs to own that, and we're not there to tell her differently.
You have a number of events coming up. It's kind of like your busy time of year is coming.
Yeah, I know. It's, I always think, oh, after this month is over, okay, it'll slow down a little bit. Then something else comes up. But, you know, I'm always looking for a way to certainly help to raise funds for the shelter. But it's not just all about that. It's about awareness, too. I'm all about talking to people about the shelter. So, and I don't ever try to avoid that when I'm in the grocery store or wherever. If somebody comes up to me and starts to talk about it, I'll certainly let them know as much as I can. But as far as some events that we have now coming up, and this is coming up soon, actually, in August, on Saturday, August 6th. This is our fifth annual golf scramble. And I remember the first year that we were doing this, we'll say, well, let's see how it goes. I mean, Ontonagon is one of our service areas, so that's why we've been having it up in Twin Lakes. And it's been successful every year. It's a four-person scramble, and the start time is at 10 o'clock, and it's $50 a person, and that includes dinner. And our dinner is going to be spaghetti and salad and garlic bread, so I think that has been successful over the years as well. And if anybody wants to register for the golf scramble, they're to call up to the club at 906-288-3720. And also, if they want to do a cart rental, they'd have to call the club. The cart rental isn't included in the registration fee. But, you know, we have a good time, and there's a lot. All the prizes are cash prizes, and we have sponsors that help to sponsor us. You know, we've had Gunlock Champion, Aspirus, Pepsi. I haven't contacted or got a confirmation from everybody yet. So, but we've had a good number of people helping to sponsor our golf scramble as well. And of course, we do the mulligans and the skins, and we have all those things. And I should say mulligan, because you can only get one. So
really? Uh-oh.
Yes, you can only get one.
Do you need four people to register?
You do. You need four people to register. You don't. And, you know, I mean, this is the way it went. One year was we had a four-person team, and they were, you know, just a mixed team, and one person backed out. Well, somebody from what was left of that four-person team hopped on a golf cart, went over to the campground, and came back with a golfer. So that's how you meet people, right? You just go grab them out of a tent at the campground and say, "Come on, golf," you know. And they did fun. They had fun. They, you know, they knew each other by the time the scramble was over. So, you know, we have a lot of nice prizes as well. I'm going to do prizes in theme baskets this year. So I'm doing one in tools, one in food, one a coffee basket, and a beach basket. So it'll be nice to dig through the baskets and see what's in them. So those are like just tickets they can buy the day of the event.
And then you have some other items coming up a little later in the fall.
That's right. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we have a number of things happening this year. October 3rd is our Day of Unity, and this is in an awareness event. It's our third annual motorcycle ride-in, and we'll be starting again up at the American in Calumet, and with police escort riding on US 41 around Montezuma, down Sheldon, and ending in Kestner Park down by the waterfront. And it's so exciting when I tell people this downstate. I said, we don't have to stop at the two stoplights in town. You know, the police escort helps us to not have to stop at the two stoplights that would be affected by that, you know.
Is it two this year or three now?
Let's see. Where would the third one be?
The new Hancock one.
Oh, if it's still there, yes. Yeah. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
It's still there in October. Yeah. Although I kind of like that light. But it may be three now, so we'll have to get Hancock involved in the police department this year in that event. So if you know a motorcyclist, we had 23 bikes the first year, and when the first two bikes came into the parking lot, I was excited because I thought, this is great, two people showed up so far, and then they just kept coming in and coming in and coming in, so there was 23 bikers that year, and then last year we had 26, so it's growing, you know, and word gets out, and we're really hoping to make it even a bigger event again this year. So, and I'm looking at getting patches because after the first year, they said we need a theme, we need a title. So they're the ADV Riders. It's Against Domestic Violence Riders. And I guess patches are a big thing for a motorcycle. And they all get a purple bandana. And so it's been a really nice event. And Diane up at the American has been so helpful in planning, helping us plan that as well. And then on up at the Keweenaw Path, which was in May up in Copper Harbor, and that was their 11th, I think, 11th annual or 12th. I can't remember now. It's been so many event, which was a great event. And I want to thank all of those that helped out with that. It raised over $4,000 for the shelter. That was great of all those people. They had a silent auction and all their bikers and riders and the roller derby girls were there, and then runners. And believe it or not, we woke up on May 14th to an inch and a half of snow on the ground. So everyone still came and did all those different athletic treks that they did. So and then anyway, so during that event, I was talking with Don Kilpala, and I understand he is bringing his boat into Houghton, that one that does the sunset cruises up in Copper Harbor during the first week of October, and he's offered to do a color cruise for us, and that would be on Thursday, October 6th. That date is hasn't been totally confirmed yet, but he said the 5th or the 6th, and so I'm choosing the 6th, and hopefully he's listening so we can pencil that in. And and so it'll be on a Thursday, and the boat holds 80 to 90 people, so I'm really looking for a big group for this. And we're going to go up to the north entry, and that would be up towards McLean's Park, I believe. And it's going to be an appetizer cruise, so it'll probably start around, I would think it'd have to be 6, because the it gets dark a little bit earlier. So I would imagine that it'll either be 5 or 6 o'clock. And so it'll be an appetizer cruise. And that will be included in the fee as well. And we don't have the fees determined on that yet either. So, and then also one other thing in October, and this is going to be on October 15th, and I've got a couple of groups to help sponsor this. And and again, one of those groups that's interested in doing this would be with the Keweenaw Young Professionals. And it's an all-day craft event day. And it's kind of fashioned after an event that happens in Mount Pleasant once a year. And that event is called is done by a foundation called Mary's Dreams. Nothing to do with me, but it was a woman. Her first name was Mary, and she worked at a newspaper down in Mount Pleasant. And her husband were in the process of a divorce, and they at that time I think their son was three, maybe four, and he showed up at her workplace after work one day in broad daylight and rammed her car and flipped over the car and shot her twice in the chest and killed her. And of course he's in prison now, but and their son's doing very well with her parents, and so they do all kinds of events, and one of them is the 9th of July, which would have been yesterday, but it was a motorcycle ride in, and up in Newberry. And so they do all kinds of events to keep this foundation of Mary's Dreams going. And they do help two of the shelters in the UP, and one of them is ours, and the other is the Diane Pepler Resource Center in Sault Ste. Marie. And so they've done all kinds of things to help with that. And they also help shelters downstate as well in Mount Pleasant and surrounding areas. And so they do this all-day craft event too. And actually, they do a two-day, but I thought for the first time I'm going to do it on just one day. And it's going to be at the Siskiwit in Calumet, and it'll be from 10 until 8 on the 15th, and there'll be a whole lot of more details coming out about that, but there'll be demos and make and takes and food. I mean, you pay a fee to come in all day, and you can come and go as you want, but there should be probably enough for you to do to want to stay and craft all day. If you're a true crafter, and you know, whether it be paper crafting, or there might be people teaching you how to do a knitting technique or a crocheting technique or other types of crafts as well. And we'll have vendors there too, and chances to win all kinds of nice prizes. So that's going to be on the October 15th. So,
well, definitely a lot of things coming up, and mm-hmm. By design, you know, you're where your shelter or home is mm-hmm. you know, closely guarded, secret yes. there. But so people have need another way to follow things going on with the shelter. What's the best way to do that?
Oh, through our social media, which now I can say that we're on Facebook, and if you go to the Barbara Kittle Gun Luck Shelter, you'll find us there on Facebook, and it's a secure site, so you can, you know, look at the things and open up the pages and see what it is, and like us if you feel like you would like to do that.
Definitely, people should check it out. Mary, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.